When they said that about him not being an American, I knew they could say that about me, recalls Evrakatos. That's when I lost my loyalty to the bureaucrats. That's when I said, I don't give a fuck about my career or about trying to become the director. I'm going to fight these fuckers to change it, and if I can't, I'll leave. The return cable that Evrakatos wrote, signing his friend's name, read, I was born in the United States. I'm a second-generation American of Greek heritage. I served in World War II with honor. For you to call me anything else is a disgrace. I would like to send your comments to my senator in New York, Jacob Javits. Well, they shat in their pants. That's when they gave my friend his stay of execution. And do you know what he did when they reinstated him? He gave them 30 days' notice and resigned. Isn't that beautiful? Greece was now different for Evrakatos, murky and ambiguous. By 1978, he had been at this game for 12 years. He had been through 11 coups and 4 attempted coups. He had gone through the murder of his station chief and 1,000 different dramas. He was bitter about the firing of his friends, and he had just broken up with his wife. He was burned out, and he didn't want to subject his son to any of these battles anymore. He put in for a transfer. When he went to say goodbye to his counterpart, the chief of the Greek Central Intelligence Service, the man told him he was relieved Evrakatos was finally leaving. You're good, but they would have gotten you if you'd stayed. It would only have been a matter of time. And so the back-alley spy was finally brought home to America, to a post in Boston, where he was given command of a little-known operation to recruit foreign businessmen. He was good at this specialty. For him, it was like a sport. He would study his prey so that by the time he got to the liaison, he would know the man's family history, what he enjoyed eating and drinking, whether he liked boys or girls, what his material aims and psychological needs were. Years selling in the ethnic enclaves of western Pennsylvania had taught him how to hook a customer and close a deal. In the weeks before the hostage rescue mission, he managed to convince 2 Iranians to go into Tehran to provide the Delta Force rescue team with real-time intelligence of any last-minute changes in security around the embassy. His favorite deputy in Boston was John Tergelian, a physically menacing Armenian-American who had one of those faces like Jack Palance's that scare the shit out of you. Evrakatos loved this man. There was something about him that was pure Aliquippa. His favorite story was about how the Turks had buried his 4 Armenian uncles alive up to their necks, poured honey on their faces, and watched as the insects ate their heads. But you know they never talked, he told Evrakatos proudly. And do you know what? I have the same attitude. It was because of Tergelian that Evrakatos first began to consider the possibility that Afghanistan might be turned into Russia's Vietnam. On Christmas Day, 1979, when the news came over the radio that the Russians were invading, Evrakatos went into the office to check the cable traffic. He opened the door to find Tergelian already there, eagerly reading the cables and laughing. The huge Armenian was shouting out his favorite word, muti, which means something like jerk in old Armenian slang. Those fucking mutis. The Russians are mutis. They're fucking mutis. The fuck you talking about, John? Tergelian explained that he had spent 3 years in Kabul and that no one fucks with the Afghans and gets away with it. Evrakatos says, John's the kind of guy who likes to do the things men do. Skydiving, flying planes, 10 whores at once, throwing spears, riding camels. He'd done all of that in Afghanistan. He'd even walked through remote parts of the country, and he was telling me that these were the only people who had ever frightened him. The last admission made a large impression on Evrakatos because Tergelian was one of the only people who had ever made him feel physically menaced. Back in 1979, at this curious hidden CIA office in Boston, the idea of the Afghan tribesmen torturing and killing Russian soldiers gave these 2 lonely bachelors something to laugh about, and Evrakatos decided that Tergelian should write up a report for the DDO. No one appears to have paid any attention at headquarters, but Tergelian's report had a huge impact on Evrakatos once he took over the Afghan war, particularly the warning he offered about these ferocious tribesmen. Don't put white men in charge. Don't give the Afghanis a lot of money. Don't trust them. It'd be like throwing money into a cesspool. All they need, he wrote, is a little help, and the Russians will be sorry they ever went into that country. The idea that there was a nation of warriors waiting in the mountains to kill Russians took seed in Avrakatos's mind. But in 1979, he never imagined that he, or for that matter the CIA, would ever even consider the remote possibility of giving these people hundreds of thousands of weapons and billions of rounds of ammunition to take on the Red Army. Back then, the CIA was rapidly pulling back from the world. It had gone a long way toward getting rid of the old street fighters like Avrakatos, and the talk was all about drawing down and avoiding the kind of high-risk covert operations that only created trouble for the agency. A new and gentler CIA was being born, and it was not the kind of environment that seemed likely to permit such a rude figure as Gustav Avrakatos to win a spot in the agency's ruling elite. After Avrakatos's 3-year tour in Boston, the CIA brought him back to headquarters and started to use him for particularly difficult and sensitive missions. "My nickname was Dr. Dirty," he explains almost bitterly. He was still considered a valuable asset, but too freewheeling to entrust with serious responsibility. So Avrakatos was thrilled when he learned that Alan Wolfe, head of the European Division, had hand-picked him to become station chief in Helsinki. Wolfe was the legendary officer who had moved in advance of Henry Kissinger to set up the Secretary of State's fabled opening to China. And the Helsinki assignment was one of the agency's most important frontline posts targeted on the Soviets. For Avrakatos, it had an even greater significance. Until then, he had been somewhat typecast as a back-alley operator, identified almost exclusively with Greek operations. The fact that Wolfe, whose judgment everyone respected, had picked him for a post that demanded worldly diplomatic skills meant that for the first time, Avrakatos would be moving out of his ethnic box and truly into the heart of the clandestine services. Once again, he could dream of rising to the highest levels. Helsinki was a done deal, and Avrakatos had already enrolled in Finnish language school when Wolfe's tour as European Division Chief ended, and a new man, William Graver, took over. Graver happened to be another of the agency's walking legends. At 6'7", he was an imposing figure who had been with the CIA ever since its founding. He held a rank equivalent to that of a 4-star general, and seemed to believe that the clandestine services should be staffed by the kind of gentleman spies that he had known when he'd served in the OSS during World War II. On that score, Gustav Avrakatos was all wrong, and rather quickly Graver decided he would not honor Alan Wolfe's appointment. The morning after Labor Day 1981, Graver summoned Avrakatos to his large corner office on the 5th floor of headquarters. Avrakatos remembers a creepy feeling overwhelming him the moment he set foot in the room. Graver had spent much of his career in Germany, and as far as Avrakatos was concerned, he might have walked into SS headquarters. "The most striking thing about Graver is that he was Teutonic. By Teutonic, I don't mean the blonde, handsome Aryan type. By Teutonic, I mean stiff, wooden, no sense of humor." The only decorations Graver seemed to have were certificates and diplomas on the wall, mostly in German. Even Graver's aides looked like Teutons to Avrakatos, the kind that carry briefcases and almost click their heels. It was like going in to see the Führer.